Welcome to the commentary track for Krzysztof Kieslowski's Blue. On the count of three, you should push play on your DVD player. One, two, three. Blue corresponds to the theme of liberty on the French flag, which is what this trilogy is about. Unlike his previous thematic series, the Decalogue, which was about the Ten Commandments, I think the one bizarre element of this trilogy is as literal as it is in terms of the color schemes related to the titles of the movie. They're actually fairly tangential in terms of what the movies are about and how those relate to the ostensible theme. In this case, I think the movie is as much about responsibility as it is about freedom, and seems to essentially argue against freedom as an idea, as a reality. That tire is important, become important, and the use of sound in this opening, and I think of subjective camera will be an important theme as the movie goes on. In this opening, you see a young girl and a man. You do not see the other passenger in the car. You don't actually see her until she's in the hospital. She will be, the first time you see her, of course, she'll be disfigured and bruised and otherwise not be what you expect of Juliette Binoche. I do not think that's any accident. And this, like, that aggressively subjective shot, I think, is clues you in that the movie is not really representative of a reality, and prepares you for some of the particularly the sound techniques that are used to more inside a person's head rather than the world as it is in any objective sense. And that very narrow depth of focus is a theme, or is a recurrent motif as well. In this case, of course, you're seeing brake fluid, which will become important in a few minutes. I have not listened to the Annette Innsdorf commentary that is on this DVD. I hope I'm not repeating what she says. She's certainly much more familiar with Kieslowski's work than I am, having written a book on it, or maybe several. There's a car accident.
Pages fly the first time.
And it's almost like somebody's hand throws them up. It doesn't look, it's not very realistic, and it doesn't seem realistic to me.
Well, it seems strange that the two things that you see come out of the car are the pages and the beach ball. Okay. It's rolling across the field out there.
Notice that this this opening is very blue. And that it's strange that there's a comment by David Thompson in his Biographical Dictionary of Film, in which he basically argues that Kieslowski's movies seem to think they're perfect, and that irritates him to no end. And I can certainly see the carefulness of the construction, and the premeditation involved is can be off-putting. Again, in a very narrow depth of focus here, a very skewed perspective. My wife has commented that the death of the little girl and the husband is very radically different from the exact same occurrence at the beginning of The Descent. And it's an interesting concurrence between these two movies, that they both begin with virtually no context, and there's the first good look you get at Juliette Binoche. not one of her better days.
Well, the reason I brought that up was because it seems like it sets a tone of chaos and trauma for the descent, and here it's handled so mutedly that it's very different. I mean, even the window breaking doesn't rise to the level of the chaos of the descent in that opening.
Is that a flaw here? I mean, it's again that level of control and that level of perfection and that real.
No, I just think it speaks volumes about the direction we're headed versus how the descent played out.
I don't think you'll find many comparisons in the world between The Descent and Kieslowski's Three Colors trilogy. I guarantee you Annette Insdorf did not mention the two. Of course, that's for different reasons entirely, but... Here, of course, she's so pathetic that she needs help killing herself. She doesn't even, can't even fathom how she's supposed to get those pills down her throat. She just holds them in her mouth and can't even begin the process. Interesting amount of shame involved in judgment and involved in the look between the nurse and Juliette Binoche. If you didn't know it were about freedom, would you have any idea that it's about freedom?
Maybe eventually. I mean, it certainly informs my watching it because I think about her later on as it's revealed. I think of her gaining freedom from the life that she didn't particularly want freedom from. I mean, obviously, she loved her husband, she loved her child. But no, it's not obvious to me that it's either about seeking freedom or having freedom thrust upon you.
She seems to be, I mean, she seems in this opening to, in the first half of the movie, to really desire, she pushes away from all that her life was and denies and essentially divests herself of it, but she can't ever find that freedom because she comes back to it. I mean, she returns...
Does she return, or are people like here? The assistant is bringing her the funeral. She hasn't made any active effort to go back to her life. People are bringing it to her at this point.
But she returns to. She goes back to. I mean. She cannot escape her old life in the end.
Sure.
And this is a.
But is that a function of her finally being free from having to hide it? Having to hide herself in her old life?
At this point, I don't know. It's an interesting touch here when she reaches out to the television screen, the camera actually moves in closer at that point. It's a very godlike thing. She kind of points to the screen and the camera operator photographing the funeral zooms in at that point.
And she reaches out to touch the child's casket, but not her husband's.
Correct. a shot coming up of her lips where I think initially it looks as if she's starting to smile. Then it kind of breaks down into sobbing. But I think that there's another moment a little later where that's true as well, where it's not clear what her emotional state is. I think that she was laughing at the announcer's proclamation of the importance of her husband as a composer, because, of course, in the end, it turns out that she is the composer.
Spoiling it already.
I imagine anybody who's watching this has already seen the movie.
Sure enough.
There's blue in virtually every frame, just as there's, you know, red and white are recurrent themes in the other two. Does it strike you as too much?
I think only when it's like this, and maybe it's necessary.
I think in this case, it's actually the subjectivity of the movie becomes really clear, because that blue isn't anywhere around, that blue filter, but its effect is that, because that music is in her head at this point. I mean,
right.
There's no source sound, but that is what she's hearing. And then there's that woman saying hello, and then there's this fade to black, and then a long pause, and then a fade back in, and that's her returning to reality. I'm more thinking of the little bits of blue that show up in virtually every frame, like that blue screen right there and behind her.
I don't think it's affected in any way. I don't think it's something that looks forced into a frame, no. So I'm not troubled by it.
You don't think when the movie's called Blue and there's blue everywhere that it's a little... it's a little much.
It doesn't feel that way to me.
Okay, I'm interested.
If the movie were called Purple and there were lots of purple, it's just a function of, I think, blue being a color that exists a great deal in the world.
But not to this degree, not this elegantly, and not framed so well.
But at the same time, I think I'm willing to give him credit that it's not.
There's the first mention of
where's your blue now?
I said virtually every frame.
Okay.
There's the first mention just under the 13-minute mark. It was in his hand. It just wasn't in the frame. It was misframed. That's the problem. At the 13-minute mark, the first mention of the possibility that her husband didn't compose his own music, or the music for which he is credited. And you can't avoid having, it's difficult to avoid having blue, but it's very clear that there are filters in the placement of certain objects. And it seems, I guess it seems almost facile. It's called Blue, it's about, and there's obviously a strain of grief that runs through it. It seems a little obvious.
I'm not troubled by it.
Okay. I'm not sure I am either, but I'm playing devil's advocate.
Again?
For instance, her child's room was the blue room, and there's the blue mobile / lamp.
If it were called something else, would you care?
Well, but I think the framing is the framing of the entirety, which is its positioning as a trilogy, with each name of a movie representing a color on the French flag, which therefore represents this theme: liberty, equality, brotherhood. I think it comes with so much, it it comes with its own baggage. And I think it's worth talking about whether that framing is necessary, appropriate, whether it adds or detracts. I think if it were named something else and weren't part of the Three Colors trilogy, it would probably feel like a different movie, and we wouldn't be talking about some of these issues.
If it were called Freedom, for instance. Liberté. I'm just asking.
Calling it blue creates a level of abstraction, but it's... I think if you see the movie, if you've been exposed to it, that information and what it means is likely to have... it's a concept you're probably familiar with. So I don't know that calling it Liberté is much different than calling it bleu.
Fair enough.
What I'm most interested in is the idea that there's this kind of this bluntness about it in terms of the color scheme and it's what the colors relate to and what they're supposed to mean in the actual theme of the movie, which I think almost undermines what is given as its theme.
So you're saying when the blue appears, like this blue flashing across her face, the blue of the folder of the music.
Well, this is. I mean, she's holding the. She's got some of the. I think the plastic pieces from that lamp in front of her at that point, so that reflection isn't so troubling. The blue folder is. It's a little much. And I think the trilogy becomes more. Complicated as it goes on. Red is a much. I mean, it's not as if, and this is the most straightforward of the three, I think.
And the first, right?
Yes, although I think it makes more sense as the second, but that's another discussion for another time, probably. It's the most. Red is very complicated, both thematically and narratively, and this is a. This is linear, and it's really only got a couple of characters, a couple of actual characters. And so it's pretty simple and straightforward, and so maybe the color scheme is meant as a reflection of that.
Pointed it out, I see all the blue. Didn't bother me at all in that.
Is it, would you not notice it? Obviously there's a bluntness of blue like that, but in
right.
the background where she's talking with her, I assume her attorney or her banker, it's maybe a little more subtle.
I think that, as I said, I think blue is commonplace enough. I mean, I can look around where I'm sitting right now, and I see you're wearing blue, I'm wearing blue, there's blue on the wall, there's blue on the speaker. There's a lot of blue in this room alone, and I guess that wouldn't bother me. Didn't
so if it were called
me.
Periwinkle or okra?
That's very different.
Of course, these photographs indicate that he knows something that Julie does not know. Here's a very... again, the focus is very shallow here. And I think the only evidence you really need to know in terms of the question of who wrote the music comes when the notes stop on the paper and the music continues going, because she is its creator. That hasn't happened yet, of course.
It's about to.
And it's important that the camera keeps moving along with the is it called the clef or is it the
staff?
The empty staff to of course now she's going to stop that music in her head. More blue. I think calling a movie blue and establishing certain color themes, and then you start to see it kind of pops out at you. So in fairness, and while it was obviously, there are obviously a lot of intentional placements, even inadvertent things you notice.
Well, but if you're David Thompson, you don't believe anything was inadvertent.
No arguing against David Thompson.
I wouldn't dream of trying.
Even the corrections are in blue.
See, I'm thinking that's totally reasonable.
Except there's a reason most corrections are red, it's so that they are easy to see and that they don't blend in.
Yeah, but...
I think it's a little much, but I like the way the music kind of gets mangled when the sheets go through the...
I thought that was disappointing.
Too obvious? Too yes. much?
See, blue, I can handle. But that annoyed me.
Which of your three is the favorite? For which is your favorite among the three?
I don't know. I think I've always come back to this one because of the music.
Something very infantile about her oral issues with the pills, and it's here as well. It's like she can't figure out how she's supposed to eat that. And she's doing it as an aggressive child would rather than as an adult would. I think that you saw that with the pills as well. Or she, essentially, it was like a funny bunny. See how many pills you can get in your mouth and still say funny bunny. Or is it funny bunny?
Fuzzy bunny, I think.
Fuzzy bunny?
Yeah. And it's marshmallows. But yes.
Instead of pills.
Well, yeah. I suppose it depends.
This movie is fairly compact at about 98 minutes. How much of this denial of her past or checking her past is necessary for us to see?
Yeah, I think you probably need to see at least the clean out the house, sell everything, because it gives you a sense of the extreme nature of her choice.
Is it hard to relate to that choice because it is so extreme? I mean, lots of people have lost family members, very close family members, obviously. And very few of them deal with it in this way. Is it hard to relate to her behavior?
I I certainly think that if one had the means to walk away from a life of memories that were painful, I think it's probably entirely reasonable. So no, I don't think it's hard to relate to, but
the theme of freedom casts this this opening section in an interesting light. It almost, because freedom is a word with positive connotations, the idea that the death of her husband and child has freed her from her obligations and has made her a free person is kind of counterintuitive, we think of, and I think it sort of offsets the grief that we expect her to be going through and that she obviously is going through in some ways, but
so it's not the way she's expected to, because the housekeeper, or whatever her role is, says, "I'm crying because you're not."
Right. But the idea that this is not a bad thing that has happened to her, but a freeing thing, I mean, that's...
I don't know that they have to be separate. I mean, I don't know that...
I mean, there, it's possible for bad things that happen to be also free you.
Yes.
And not
but free, but
in
I think
way.
My issue is, true, my issue is that the word freedom has a positive connotation. That would seem to be counterintuitive in this context. I think it's very interesting that he's soaking wet and dripping and she's dry. Which goes back to that comment that the housekeeper made. I'm crying because you're not. There's this pristine, unsoiled, perfect object who can't even be bothered to grieve in a normal way.
Well, the whole point of this for her was to say, see, I'm just like, I'm human, I'm sweaty.
Well,
I cough.
That's coming now. She's also very, I mean, it's obvious that she's very calculating, because what she's done is put him in a position where she can't come after him because he's naked. And so she'd always planned to leave him here. Notice that she sweats and she coughs and she has cavities, but she doesn't ever admit to farting.
I actually thought about that.
I'm guessing Juliette Binoche does not fart.
I'm betting you're absolutely right.
And I'm guessing you won't hear that on the Annette Innsdorf commentary either. Of course, you know, it is kind of cheating when you're trying to put blue in every frame to put her in jeans. I think that's, you know, that's pretty lazy. Is that the first time we've heard her name, Julie?
No, we've heard it a couple times. When the interviewer came.
Okay. Of course, this is just... You know, the way that accident was done, and how... I think the word was mutedly. I can't think of a... And then there's this, which is so...
brutal?
It's almost as if they're being equated. Or that the actually the fist is more painful to her than the car accident. Now this is interesting. She's been primarily in isolation, and all her contact has been one-on-one with people. And here's the first time we've seen her among others. Essentially, she has emerged. I think the idea is that she has emerged from her solitude.
Do you have any sense of how much time has passed?
When she met with the banker or the lawyer, her face was healed.
Oh, that's true.
So I think that that was meant to be an indicator of time.
Does he recognize her? Does he know who she is?
I don't believe so. I mean, I think the premise of what she's doing now is that, and she's giving her married name right here.
Right.
And then she says, oh, I'm going to give you my married name. She's the premise of what she's doing, because when she's talking to her lawyer, she says, nobody must know. Premise of what she's doing is that neither she nor her husband is enough of a celebrity that, among the unwashed, and obviously his funeral was televised, but that she's not enough of a celebrity that she's in any danger of being recognized.
Even with her backpedaling and giving her maiden name, that's what I wondered.
Well, because she gave her married name. I mean, if she's so calculating, I think that if that were important, she wouldn't have given it in the first place, her married name.
Hmm. Is it calculating in the sense of the story, or is it calculating in terms of exposition telling us that she's going back to her maiden name? Because we wouldn't know either of her names at this point.
I guess there's some information given that you now know her married name, and you now know her maiden name, and that she's now living under her maiden name. But I also think, to me it seems that it suggests that it reminds
us. Testing the waters to see if he does know who she is?
I don't think. I think she's being careless there in a way that is uncharacteristic of her. And that says to me that whether she uses her married name or her maiden name isn't going to matter because her husband's a composer and who knows what composers look like.
Got
it. Why does she take this with her?
Because it was her daughter's.
Yeah, but she's denying that her daughter ever existed, essentially, by starting her new life. Passage of time is very elegant, again, because here her hands are healed, so we know that, and obviously the waiter asks, the usual, and
so she's been there a while.
Yeah.
And yet you had trouble with Gwyneth Paltrow's haircuts and sliding doors.
Well, I don't think that was so elegant. It was too obvious. The Band-Aid and the haircuts were too obvious. If you heard a sigh, that was Bad Dog Ginger. She's sleeping. She's bored by these foreign movies.
I have a sigh, Miss Ginger.
That's actually a pretty nice suit for a guy who turns out to be homeless. What do you think of this shot, with the way the light, it would appear that a light, a cloud is passing over the sun, but, to me it kind of rhymes with the blue filter shot when the music was blaring, before it did the fade to black, that there's, something expressionistic about the shot, rather than objective.
Telling us that we're kind of more in her head than in the world at that
yes.
moment?
Yes, that's what I think.
That's legit, because it doesn't make a lot of sense otherwise.
It would be difficult to imagine what the lighting situation would be that would cause that to happen. Blue jeans, a swimming pool. Didn't they come up with anything a little more creative?
No.
Now, here's where I think the issue of freedom against responsibility becomes is really sort of introduced in the sense that she chooses here not to open the door to this person who's been beaten and who is threatened again with another beating. She chooses to ignore what would be her civic responsibility in this case. And presumably the result of that is that he is further harmed by her failure to act. So her freedom comes at a cost to him in that situation. Only that she's outside of her door naked when she eventually does open her door.
Well,
half naked.
No, I don't even mean that. I just mean I don't think she's so far removed that she doesn't at least feel some obligation.
She certainly considers opening the door. And she's clearly petrified here, and she's clearly trying to make a decision. What am I going to do?
I wouldn't open the door.
I don't think I would either, but I think there's... it's a theme that I think recurs when she's asked to sign a petition to kick her neighbor out. She also chooses not to act there, but in that case, the result of her... saying that's none of my business is that the neighbor gets to stay when everybody else wants to kick her neighbor out because she's a floozy. And who wouldn't want to get rid of floozies? I'm not quite sure why this... when the door closes on her, I think it's the only time that you get a sense that she's returned to the world enough that she can understand kind of the cosmic joke that has just been played on her, and that she isn't upset about it, but that she can actually laugh at herself and her situation. Doesn't mean she's not pissed, but... And of course, this is more green than blue. I think maybe the movie would be better titled Green Blue. Because when there's not blue, there's a difference.
I know.
If you were to place the movies in an order, what would it be?
You're testing my memory now. I don't know. What about you?
I've always thought that it should go white, blue, red.
Why?
White is a comedy. And I think as a... I guess you could make an argument that it's a... that provides some relief between the heaviness of blue and red. But it seems that it's... It seems that there maybe ought to be a progression from lighthearted comedy to something that's very emotional to something that's much more intellectual. That it seems a fairly natural progression to me.
So white, blue, red?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, the first one involves a guy... sending himself away in a suitcase and being shat upon repeatedly by a bird. And it's got Julie Delpy, who's nobody idea of a substantive actress, except for people who really like Before Sunrise. And now, see, there's another subjective thing. Those blue essentially bursts when there's no blue, they're unsourced. Not unlike when you have a pop song on a soundtrack to a movie and there's no radio playing or no in-film source for that. And this is, I think, the first time I've seen something like color play that same role.
See any of that, did we?
See any what?
About him giving her the blanket.
No. So here she's introduced with another opportunity for civic engagement, because the person we just saw when she was locked out, they're trying to kick her out because she's a loose woman. And she says right there, that's not my problem. And the result of that is that, again, the woman gets to stay in the building, so she has essentially aided somebody through her detachment. This woman in the recycling can, or the recycling bin, is repeated, I believe, in the other two movies. And
does anybody help her? In any of the other?
No. Again, here's some of that subjective, Seems like when we're seeing Juliette Binoche here, there's that blinding white. It feels subjective again. And I guess if responsibility is a theme, nobody helps her, and she's...
And that's another opportunity to engage, and she doesn't.
And right there, she's clearly in her own reverie. At this point, it's been, I think it's a reasonable assumption the first time you see the movie that whole music theme is gone, because it hasn't been mentioned since, and it seems to have kind of fallen away. And the skateboarder mentions that he found that this is the first time she's actually noticed it's been missing, even though it's been months since the accident. She hasn't thought about it at all.
How did he find her?
He was the one with the... who was playing by the side of the road and was hitchhiking.
Right, I remember that, but I mean after that. It's never adequately explained, but...
It's through her doctor. There's the blackout in the music again. It's the issue of responsibility is raised here again, and that the hitchhiker skateboarder has returned it, something that wasn't his. And of course then she says, we'll get talk about that in a minute. First we have to have the joke. I don't think there's anything I haven't spoiled yet. It's a laxative. Here's the situation where seems like she started to cry, but then when she moves her hands, she's actually laughing in this case. She's not reacting still not reacting as we might expect her to. Joke important?
I think it gives us some information about her and her relationship with her husband. And right there.
I'm asking about the joke itself. What it is. The idea of an unconventional treatment. That's what I was talking about it being a bizarre, what she says when the guy comes and returns a necklace and she says, you returned it, it's yours. Essentially, whatever he had done, he ends up with a necklace. But in this case, he had fulfilled his civic duty so he could have it without guilt.
But that wasn't his goal, I don't think.
No, it wasn't, but I think he is getting his... essentially, she is being just and giving him his karmic reward. If I didn't say karmic, that's what I meant. Karmic.
You did say karmic.
And here she seems crippled by the music. It seems to scare the piss out of her, as if she can't escape. She can't escape the music at this point. And she curls up into what's the dead man's float. In your swimming class terms.
It's more fetal than dead man's float.
So I think there's, the first two opportunities for civic, for being engaged in the world, she basically said, turn them down. Then she gave the necklace back when she could have easily said, that's mine. And here she moves, does a very minor thing and moves the musician's case under his head.
But that seems really presumptuous to me when she does that.
Why?
Because the other people needed help. And certainly if he wanted to put his head on his flute case, he could have done that. Without her help. Now he needs help, just not the kind she gave him.
So it's a gesture that is of convenient kindness. It costs her nothing. And then of course she tells him, "You got to hold on to something," and that's. But a convenient kindness is better than not doing anything at all.
Certainly, and I think she suggests an engagement in the world that wasn't present before.
But I think there's a progression here. I think the movie is her journey toward being responsible and toward re-engaging in the world. And I suppose maybe responsibility cast against freedom means that responsibility has a negative connotation. But maybe that engagement is what gives her freedom in the end.
Mm-hmm.
To actually live rather than to exist. She seems petrified, Juliette Binoche does at this point. Why? She asks if it's a souvenir, and she shakes and nods her head at the same time. She seems petrified because this is somebody who actually seems capable of seeing through her.
Yes.
She's recognizing that perhaps even anonymity is... even if she lives in a place where nobody knows who she is, she cannot really still be anonymous among perceptive people. Even perceptive floozies.
Hey, don't knock the floozies.
I'd like to.
Well then, you got trouble.
Again, that kind of warped perspective. In the spot on the back, shot at the back of the spoon. So about the halfway point where Olivier returns... I think it's not so important that the hitchhiker found that the hitchhiker found her. It's that the hitchhiker did find her, which shows that she's...
Can be found.
Can be found, which is important with Olivier. When I see Olivier, I think Kurt Loder. Is it important that I mentioned that the first time you see Juliette Binoche, she's badly beaten up? How important is it to this movie that Juliette Binoche is considered by many people to be sort of this ideal of beauty?
Well, certainly I think that someone as beautiful as she is doesn't just fade into the woodwork.
That's almost like a plot point. That's a curious detail. He was the person who had been homeless, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet he was just dropped off by a car.
Or he was the one who was sleeping on the street. We don't
yes.
know if he's homeless. She might be just as homeless.
He also reminds me of Harvey Keitel a bit.
Hmm.
Not nearly as creased. In the mouth, I can see him. Music in this is always, there's very little music that's played over an extended period of time. It's always very fragmentary, which I think is, which I like about it. I think it's appropriate for the character of a composer. I'm guessing that things come in bits and need to be, have the connected tissue added later. She didn't want any children, and of course now she's got a family of mice.
They're rats, but... You might be right.
I think there's a... To talk about maybe return to the issue of perfection again, she has this perfect plan for removing herself from the world, and maybe there's this maybe the film is a symbol for the fact that you can't be. There's no such thing as a perfect plan. That even when you've crafted this plan, you're going to get mice or rats in your apartment. And you can't avoid having little baby mice or rats in your apartment. Is that the first time she's noticed anything about anybody?
No, when Olivia comes in. Or does he even say... No, he's the one who says, I fell.
Yes.
She doesn't notice anything that prompts it. So, I don't know.
That progressive engagement in the world, or re-engagement, I think, is maybe what and obviously there's a plot purpose for him, for her to ask that question, which is to find out that he has a cat, which of course leads to, gives her a possible solution on the mice / rats. Is blue less prominent maybe as the movie goes on? Is that inside of the jeans?
Yeah, I don't think the jeans count. There's a nurse in a blue uniform.
I've heard her mother mentioned. Mother obviously is what's the word I'm looking for?
In a nursing home?
She has a bit of dementia.
Huh.
Doesn't recognize her daughter. The bungee jumping on the television, I think, is amusing. The idea that it looks like the camera, that things are paused and then reversed as if you could undo what you've done.
Hmm.
Well, of course, that's only it's not a reality, but it's a... I think her mother basically not recognizing her as a recognition of the effect of her choosing to remove herself from the world. Keep returning to the bungee jumpers. I think the first time you see it, it could just be sort of a, well, okay, and then this is the third time they're showing the footage.
Freedom from something? Gravity? Except not really.
Still professing that she wants nothing to do with anybody. And the little bit of role playing that happened there, she recognized, or in the end, accepted that the only way she could converse with her mother was to pretend that she was
her sister.
Her mother's sister. But she threw those away.
She threw hers away.
Does Olivier have Gordon's gin on like a table right there?
Looks like it might be.
It's a shout out to our friend Mike. That looks like a Gordon's gin bottle to me. you got the shot of the ceiling there where there's this big water stain on it. I think it. Look at the cute little baby mice. Look at the mama eating the baby mouse.
She's putting them away in safe place.
Bad cat. Goodbye, little mice.
Hi, mice.
She has more guilt about that than not helping the guy getting the crap beat out of him.
Her guilt is strangely misplaced. Yes. The water seems to be her home.
Such an odd thing to say.
Well, the way she's sitting, the way she's positioned, it's a question to ask. And there she recalls what Olivier looked like when he was soaking wet. He was...
this time avoiding
chillins and they're first they're the mice, then they're them,
a gaggle of girls just her daughter's age.
Here's her first, here's the first thing she does where she's actually inconveniences herself. Right before, when the phone rang, there was a long shot of the city, then a medium shot of a neighborhood, and then into her apartment. I thought it was interesting. I think that's the first, it's the first sense we've ever really been given a geography, or it suggests that maybe there's perspective, and we're going from that subjective of the opening of the movie, and to listen to me a little more objective here. At least we get some TNA.
We wouldn't want you to be deprived.
It's just like The Sopranos. Gotta have one strip club scene.
Sorry to make her come out in the middle of the night.
Well, it's interesting that she apologizes, but it's almost like when she said you came, it was as if she had just basically tested her. That there wasn't any real reason for her to have called her, but she's essentially trying to pull her back. And obviously now we learn that there's a reason why she called her, and that's that she's the only friend that she has, and called her because her father was there. But she's the one who seems to be the facilitator to her coming back out into the world.
Mm-hmm. But is it based on obligation? After Floozy helped her with processing at least the grief about the mice?
I almost think that Lucille exists not as a not, and this is going to sound stupid, but not unlike, say, Clarence and It's a Wonderful Life, is a device it's a device to essentially push along the plot in certain ways, but to as a somebody who's a character, but also somebody who's maybe a little not quite supernatural, but has a symbolic importance. Does that make any sense at all?
Mm-hmm.
As if she were sent from God or something, and I don't mean that in any literal sense, but that again, the idea that she cannot escape her life.
Right, even in a strip club in a neighborhood.
A picture that was taken when she was in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Forget me saying that the blue kind of disappears. Unless blue represents her past life, and it's essentially reasserting itself here.
That could very well be.
A cameo by Julia Roberts.
Hmm?
It's a cameo by Julia Roberts, the way she smiles when she smiles large. The only time we saw him when he was alive was, I don't think we got a look at his face, really. There, of course, are indications that perhaps Patrice was not faithful, which we've seen those pictures before, but this is the first time she has seen them.
Right.
And I guess obviously that sort of thing would be a shock, but given the deception that they practiced as essentially with Patrice getting credit for her work, it shouldn't be a surprise that he was deceptive in his personal life. Is the resemblance between these two women intentional, you think, in the haircut?
I don't know. I don't see it as clearly, apparently.
There's a the theme that question of responsibility with respect to the scores is that both Olivier obviously and the I don't know if it's the librarian or the person who made the corrections on the scores felt that there was responsibility that this music come out in the world or remain in the world and not be destroyed. Mm-hmm. Of course, she feels violated because those were her scores. And even if they were her husband's, it would obviously be something very personal, but obviously they don't recognize, but they have taken what belonged to her.
Right.
What were hers. And essentially taking control, again, the issue of control. Things she owns, she no longer controls.
And if you go to the trouble of trying to return it to her because of the recognition that it belongs to her, like the necklace.
She doesn't want it, though.
Right.
She's just a two-faced bitch.
That's not very nice.
I'm kidding, but that's an interesting... I mean, we talk about whether characters are relatable or likable. The most interesting characters are flawed, and, I mean, that's... It's realistic, and I think her flaw is that one of her flaws is that she wants it both ways. Give me what's mine, you can't have it. But oh, I don't want that. She wants the control of the music, but she doesn't want the responsibility that goes along with it.
Of having created it.
Having created or of finishing it. And the music equals Patrice as well, because he belonged to someone else as well, to another woman. Fucking lawyers.
Hi. Not all of us are homewreckers.
Are you?
My lawyer has advised I take the fifth.
I believe those are the birds that shit on Carol in White.
Doesn't Red have a big courtroom scene, or is that White also?
I think.
Or is it this one?
The judge is one of the main characters in Red as a judge, and Carol, the protagonist of White, is goes to court and is humiliated, basically. I believe Juliette Binoche will go into his courtroom accidentally at some point. I'm actually right here. You get to see. There's Julie Delpy, and back Carol Curl was facing us.
Oh, and they're talking about equality on the stand.
Equal footing, equal standing.
Well, isn't white equality?
Yes, it is.
Okay. See, I pay attention sometimes.
She, of course, was wearing a necklace that looked strangely familiar. And she's pregnant.
I've forgotten this. Not much of a hand washer, though, is she?
She's French. They're all dirty. I'm kidding. Nice way to start a conversation.
At least she's honest. Yes.
For somebody who so wanted to divorce herself from her previous life, it's interesting to me that this makes her want to re-engage with it. Something that would not be allowed in an American movie, even back when this one was made.
The smoking? The smoking inside, or the pregnant woman smoking? Yes.
The pregnant woman smoking inside. Well, it was interesting in A Prairie Home Companion, though, that Maya Rudolph, who clearly was pregnant, her character was pregnant, was allowed to take a slug of champagne.
Did she?
Yeah.
Because I thought we were surprised that... I don't remember.
This movie is very blue. Unlike 2046, which is very green.
Very green.
The dog that is barking is not Bad Dog Ginger.
It is outside dog, some sort.
As she tried to kill herself with the pills, she was again trying to kill herself, or at least making feeble attempts at killing herself.
I don't know. I don't think your body would let you drown yourself.
Well, generally, your body doesn't let you swallow pills to kill yourself either. You start vomiting.
Yeah.
Bodies are pretty resilient. They only let you kill yourself slowly. Or in cars. Also still in Skarsgård.
Yeah, I guess I can see it.
Kurt Loder more than anybody, though.
Kurt Loder, definitely.
That's a great actor, Kurt Loder. Which is better, knowledge or ignorance?
In this case, what do you gain by knowing?
I think it's clearly the prompt for her going back to Olivier and saying, "Show me what you got." So I think the value is if there's value to the music in the world. The value is that it sucks her back in.
Right, but what's the value of her knowing about the affair at this point? I mean, I'm all for truth in the world and knowing about the reality of your life, but... I'm not sure that
the visual here fades and becomes irrelevant to the music, which is kind of interesting. I think she needs to have. She was, in some ways, by getting rid of the music, she was preserving this false image of her husband, the composer. And so, when she finds out that he cheated on her, she no longer feels the need to protect him. She can take, the music can come out and can be revised and fixed and finished because it doesn't matter, she doesn't care if anybody knows that she did it. I think psychologically at least that's what's going on. So I think that's the value of her knowing about the affair. Now this suggests that they collaborated rather than that she was responsible for the music. Welfare for lawyers. Do you buy this?
No.
Does that trouble you?
No.
So you don't find, just to be clear, you don't find it realistic. You don't think it is appropriate given the content we've seen, but you are not troubled by it.
Yes.
Okay. That's my reaction as well. I was just curious if it was yours.
No, I can let it ride, but no, I don't. I don't think it could happen.
In what sense?
Even with this explanation,
She has no use for it. She has no use for the money. She's somehow independently wealthy, not explained, but put out there. Why not? I guess what I'm working toward is the idea that she is, that her responsibility is not only to, she's responsible not only for her own actions, but for her husband's. The idea that this isn't an act of kindness in giving the house to his husband's mistress, but an act of that she's of justice of what she needs to do. It's a sense of responsibility beyond oneself, as in it's essentially expanding the concept. You know, instead of my car ran into your car, so therefore I'm going to pay for your repair. But the idea that
my husband knocked you up.
No, as a society, you've been wronged, or you've been put in a bad spot, and so I have a responsibility as a member of that society to take care of you.
I'll let the guy in the street get the crap beaten out of
him. No, but it's a progression. It's a progression. She's growing. She's gone from complete isolation to a menial act of kindness to, I think, taking responsibility for herself, to then taking responsibility as a member of society. It's that level of engagement. A growing level of engagement.
And I certainly see that progression, but I don't believe... I think that's more than one could expect of another
character. Of that character. Of that character.
Or anyone, I think.
Well, what society expects of us is more than we can give in most cases. I mean, there are always times, no matter what you do, you could always have done more, as Oskar Schindler told us.
I guess my point is, I'm fine with society taking care of the floozy you knocked up, but don't expect me to do it.
The floozy lawyer versus the floozy stripper, right?
Yes.
You women, you're all the same.
Uh-huh.
I'm just waiting for that perfect floozer lawyer stripper. Instead of that blue filter, or that fade to black, there's the obscuring through a physical object rather than through a cinematic device right there. And if we look at those blue flashes or the those fade to blacks, fades to black as psychological and then finally she was comfortable or could live with the music, and of course this is just, I'm trying to remember the context for this shot.
Well, she looks to be underwater.
Pressing up against glass and right. with the dirt there and her and Olivier. Mm-hmm. Is that just expository to tell us that they've hooked up again?
Maybe. But why is it so weird?
This whole ending, I mean, this whole... It reminds me a little of the... of the ending of Donnie Darko when Mad World is playing and there's the... you get a sense after Donnie has been killed of... You get this sort of... panorama of the world. And where you... see all these characters in the context of the way they seem to have a sadness about them, even though it's sort of this obscure, ineffable thing that they can't identify. And here it seems that there's this, there's very sort of Lynchian little person in the corner. and maybe it's a return to that whole, aggressive point of view and aggressive warping of visuals that we saw at the beginning. To show the impact that even Julie, as she has isolated herself, even that she has a wide sphere of influence. That even the skateboarder, for instance, is touched by her. An expansion of the canvas to recognize that the world is larger than ourselves. Are you saying that little child has cavities already? It seems to be poking. It's ballsy for the filmmaker to put out that piece of music and as being an important piece of music because, of course, it was composed for this movie. There's again a fetal person in the eyeball. First, I think, honest expression of grief that she has, or the first freedom she has to grieve, or that she's given herself to grieve, it seems.
I thought we saw her in tears earlier.
We did when she was, when the funeral was going on, and she was, she cried, but
I thought there was one after that too.
When she was looking at the lamp, after she'd scraped her hand, she looked like she was about to start to cry, but she looked at her hand and withdrew from that. Blue. Now we're in the closing credits. Thank you for listening. I hope it was something other than boring and maybe even enlightening.